Hey, podcast friends. If you love our podcast and want to help support us to continue making cool shit, consider joining our Patreon community. Get early access to each episode, a monthly hangout on Zoom, custom answers to your questions in exclusive Patreon videos, and much, much more. Head on over to patreon.com/conversationswithcreators to become a patron today. Your support means the world to us. Now on to the episode.
The biggest thing that somebody can do is starting to understand what kind of value they provide to their clients. Because once you stop selling videos for the sake of selling videos, and you start understanding what problems your clients are facing, and you try to find a solution with video to solve that problem, that is when you start to be, or like when you are able to charge more, because clients now don't see you as just a videographer, which there are thousands of, but right. Instead they see you as a problem solver. So they're willing to pay you more because they need their problem solved. If you would, when somebody asks you for a quote, just simply take your phone and you call this client so you can ask some questions about what specifically they even want, right? To understand what their goals are, what their needs are, what their challenges are. Then you have the ability to not be judged on just simply a number, but instead you're going to be judged on that like expertise that you have, like on the high, on the level of questions that you're asking. Because imagine, like, every single videographer reaches out with just sending a quote or tries to solve the problem via email. And now you're the one that calls because nobody else calls. So you're automatically sticking out of the crowd.
Yeah.
So starting to take calls or like do calls instead of trying to solve communication issues through email and messages, that probably the biggest shift that you can do and low effort.
So the big question is this: how are creators like us who aren't built for the 9-to-5, for the people who put their passion before them being comfortable, how do we turn that passion into a living that pays the bills and a life that we love? That is the question. This podcast will give you the answers. My name is Noah Mittman, and welcome to Conversations with Creators.
Welcome to another episode of Conversations with Creators. I am your host, Noah Mittman, and joining me today is video coach and production extraordinaire, Nick Metzger. Thanks for being on, man.
Thanks for having me.
So, yeah, I've actually, full transparency, I've taken Nick's course and it helped me a ton. And I now wanted to kind of help you guys by talking to him and asking him some questions and you know, helping you find success with your creative endeavor. So talk to me about the Video Business Academy and the mission behind it.
So I started making videos like, I don't know, man, 15, 17 years ago,
yeah,
a long time. And I always wanted to, you know, initially become a stuntman, right? And I'm going to give you a bit of context before I dive
into
the question, because otherwise it makes zero sense. So I always wanted to become a stuntman. And I did, I was super serious about that and told my parents, like, guys, once I'm 18, I'm out. Like, I'm going to go to Hollywood and I'm going to work on blockbuster films. As a stuntman, and I took this super seriously. So I did parkour and free running to train for it. And one day I stumbled upon like an old camcorder that my dad owned and started making videos of my parkour and free running training. And I made videos, short films, like passion projects, all about parkour, free running. And then in 2014, I had a tumor in my back. And that tumor was kind of like the roadblock to becoming a stuntman.
Yeah,
I'm like, nah, you're not going to be one. And I could have cried about it, or I could have just, you know, keep making videos. And I decided to do so and made a bunch of parkour videos for friends. And then in 2014, the Sony FS7 was launched, the documentary camera, right? And when they launched it, they announced a short film competition where they said, like, hey, produce a short film about the topic inspiration, and whoever wins this gets the FS7 for free. And back then that was like an $8,000 camera or something like that, right? Today it's worthless, but back then it was crazy. It was like one of the first cameras with built-in NDs and stuff like that. Oh, super excited about it, right?
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, hey, obviously I'm never going to win this. There are thousands of people competing. But let me just make a video, you know, as a passion project and to get some sort of like a feel for how such a competition goes down. So I decided to participate in it. The video had like 20,000 views on YouTube or something like that, and was pretty epic. And then Sony did announce the winners during a live webinar, right? So they showed a bunch of videos, and I wanted to check out this webinar because I wanted to see like, hey, who won and what are these videos looking like to improve my skills. So they announced like the rank number 1,000 and showed that video, and then like 700 and 600 and 500, whatever. And then I go 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, Nick Metzger. And I was like, holy shit. So I literally, out of like 1,500 or 2,000 people, I got second place.
That's with, amazing.
On one end, it was super exciting. But then on the other end, it was super
one away. You're like, God damn it.
First place gets the camera. Second place gets nothing. Not even like a lens cleaning kit.
Yeah,
nothing.
Here's an SD
card, you know? So I thought to myself, oh, well, so be it. And just continued with my day to day. And then 3 days later, I get a weird phone call from a UK number. And I never picked up phone calls, especially not from a foreign number, especially not from a foreign country. And I don't know why, but for some reason, I picked up this call. And on the other end, it was Sony. And they said, hey, Nick, Sony Europe here. We have a couple of good news for you. I was like, okay, yeah, what is it? And they said, actually, there was a rule for this competition that you need to create the video specifically for this competition. And the guy who got first place sent in a 5-year-old video. So that means he was disqualified, which means you won. And I was like, yep. And I was like, damn, okay. So what does that mean? And they say, yeah, well, you get the camera.
Yeah.
I'll take it, right? And I was still in school. I've never made any money. Imagine, like, you suddenly get an $8,000 camera. It's crazy.
Yeah.
A couple days later, they call me again, and they go like, yeah, Nick, by the way, to apologize for all that confusion, we're also going to give you our new $3,000 lens with it. And I said, I mean, I'll take it.
Yeah, send it on over.
Send it over. And they did, which obviously for me was a huge motivation boost, right? I knew, okay, I'm good at making videos.
Yeah, I'm exactly.
Making those.
There's positive reinforcement there that you actually know what you're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I kept making videos. And a couple months or like a year later, the dad of a friend of mine reached out to me and said like, hey, Nick, I saw all your videos. They're looking amazing. I'm the chief of a firefighter department and we need new people. We need new firefighters. Can you help us? Can you make a video? And I said, sure, let's do it. And he replied like, okay, how much is it going to cost? We want to pay you. And I mean, how much is it going to cost? I have no idea. Like, I was still in school. I've never met any.
Right? And even school doesn't teach you how to charge.
Absolutely nothing. Right. Yeah. And I mean, I wasn't in film school, just to be specific about this. I was in like, what is it? High school, college, whatever.
Yeah. General studies, basically.
Exactly. And I had no idea. So I went to my uncle because he had a web design agency. And he told me, you know, just charged him $4,000. I was like, are you out of your mind? Like, I'm in school. I'm a kid. I've never made any money. Like, how am I going to charge them $4,000? And he said, you know what? Just trust me. Just do it. And I said, okay, I'll try. I went to the client. I tell them, okay, yeah. So, and I mean, I'm all shaking, right? Super nervous. Go like, okay, this is going to be like $4,000. And they said, yeah, we can do that. And I was like, okay, all right, cool. Let's do it. And I literally had, I was freaking out. Like, how am I going to get $4,000 for a single video? It's crazy. So I made the video, and that was, you know, at the right time, right place, a lot of hard work and a little bit of luck. It was going viral, got 700,000 views on YouTube. It was in the news, in the media, and they got over 25 new applicants. And to me, that was kind of like the moment where I knew, holy shit, like I can do what I love, solve somebody else's problem with it, and get paid. Like, that's epic. And then because of that, obviously, I was like, okay, let me start a company. Like, I just won this competition. I got this firefighter company video
there.
Viral. I got paid. Like, great. Let's do this. And I'm going to freaking crush it. Clients are going to come to me and it's going to
be.
And guess what happened? Obviously, nothing. Right? I started the company and I had no clients. I was relying on word of mouth, on referrals. I had a little project here and there from friends and family, but nothing to keep to get a sustainable business off the ground. And so I thought to myself, okay, maybe I should learn sales and marketing because that's what's going to get me clients.
Yeah.
And bear in mind, back then, there was no such thing as like a video business coach or whatever.
Right, right.
There were a lot of courses. There were a lot of courses, but they were all for like social media marketing agencies or online marketing and stuff like that. So I thought, okay, I mean, let me take those. Then at least I learned something. And then I basically took whatever I learned and adapted it and kind of like thought it through on like, how can I use this and form a strategy so that it works for my video business? And that was when it started to take off. So I went from literally 2K a month to 5K to 10K, 20, 40, 80, 100. The best month we ever had was 113K with the video agency. And because of that, obviously, I had multiple videographers reach out to me, like friends of mine. And they asked me like, hey, dude, how did you do that? Like, that's freaking crazy.
It's like the Wolf of Wall Street scene when he comes up and he's like, is that your car outside? If that's you, give me a check stub. I'll quit my job and come work for you.
And he had like a check for the $72,000.
Yeah.
100%. It was pretty similar. And I started to coach these people, right? I started to help them out. And I found a passion in this. Like I started to enjoy seeing them getting results from what I teach them. And in December,
before we get into that, how long did it take you to go from 2K a month to, let's call it like 40K?
From 2K to 40. I mean, look, I'll be an open book here. I'll show you the numbers. Because I have everything tracked from the history of the company.
That's been one thing that is really added. Cash tracking has been a big thing that I've worked on.
Big time. Big time. I mean, to be fair, I didn't start tracking until 2017. I started the company in 2016. So 1 year in, I started proper tracking. And if we look at it, let's say from like 2017, 2020. Yeah, there we go. Can you see it?
Let me add it. Yeah, got it.
Yeah. So that's German. Sorry, I'll translate it to you. There we go. By the way, we didn't track expenses. We weren't good at tracking. But we did track the revenue. So in January 2017, I was doing 17K, then like 11K. And that's CHF is Swiss francs. So it's a little bit more in USD, but let's call it the same. 15K in April 2017, then 20K in May. And it was very, very inconsistent, right? Like 9K suddenly, and then like 5K, 8K, then 26 again, then 5K again. And then basically when it really started to take off was when my business partner and I split up. That was in December of 2018, right? So in December of 2018, this was obviously a very bad month because we went through a lot of discussions and, you know, it's basically like a breakup. But soon after, I was free to make decisions super fast and implement everything, right? Because I didn't have to talk it through with him. So I went from these 7K to like another 3K month here. And then boom, suddenly 44, right? Then 41, then 35, then 58.
So you found the system that worked and really...
Exactly.
Then you wanted to.
Yeah. And then as I said, like the biggest month we ever had was 113K.
By the way, that's what's insane about that. March 2020, that was like D-Day for COVID. And I literally lost 90% of my clients in that month.
And no, we crushed it because we adapted. Wild.
Yeah.
We adapted to COVID. Anyways,
there's specific numbers.
Basically, I started to find a passion in helping others. And then in December 2020, then in 2022, I got an offer from the biggest video production company in Switzerland, and they offered to purchase my company because they wanted to expand to my city, right? And basically, the easiest way to get rid of a competitor is you buy them if you can.
Right.
So I agreed to it because I wanted to focus on one business anyways. Mm-hmm. I was already doing the consulting, right? I was already running the Video Business Academy, and I felt like, hey, this is like the right step to do it. And basically, to get to your initial question, what the Video Academy is all about, now after 12 minutes.
No, it's great. We need the context.
Yeah. So what the Video Business Academy is all about is basically helping struggling videographers and filmmakers make a proper living from their passion. Because at the end of the day, so many creatives have insanely good skills. They know how to make amazing videos, right? They just don't know how to market and sell themselves.
100%.
And they don't make money.
Videographers, it's all kinds of creatives. It's graphic designers. It's artists. It's, you know, that's, you know, why really for this, like we, like for the people listening, like, yes, we are talking about video, but this totally can go to any creative career. It's super important and super needed. And yeah, I agree. No, a lot of creatives don't know how to, you know, make a living with it.
Yep, fully agree. The obviously why I called it the Video Business Academy and why we only take on videographers is because I have my expertise in that.
Right.
Technically, you can literally apply everything we teach.
Oh yeah,
any creative business, but we just, as we teach, right? We practice.
Well, it was perfect. Teach, like, you know exactly who your ideal client is, and when I was looking, because I was like, I knew that again. I was like, whenever I send Clay work, I always get all caps responses, like they love it, but. Learning how to charge, learning how to grow the business. I knew I needed some help, and you know, your ad popped up, and that's specifically for video was what I was looking for, because I had, you know, seen other courses, I'd seen other stuff that was like general business, and I was like, yeah, but like it's not like exactly what I'm trying to do, and so it was perfect timing.
Yeah, I mean that's why we picked one market.
Yeah. Exactly right. So tell me kind of what are some common challenges that you, like when people come into the program, when people, you know, you're coaching them, what are they facing? What, you know, how in the basics does VBA help them overcome stuff?
So we did a ton of market research, right? And we've gone into, you know, we've done deep dives into the brains of videographers, basically. And they all want the same thing. They all want to make enough money, but they don't care about the money. Like, they don't really want to make money to have money.
Yeah.
They want to make enough money to sustain a good living, like make a good living from it, live in a nice house or in a nice apartment, whatever, drive a decent car, be able to purchase whatever gear they want to buy, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Be able to travel whenever and wherever they want to go to. And basically, you know, just live a comfortable life and make cool make cool videos and produce whatever
make
they
cool
have.
Shit is one of my biggest things.
And make it reality. And there is one key thing that 99% of them are missing, and that is learning how to properly market themselves and do sales.
Yeah.
Right? So I said one key thing, but marketing and sales is like two in one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's very true. So on just kind of a 10,000 foot level and not getting into too much of what's in the course, because there's so much good stuff. What is one thing that can help, maybe like a mindset shift or even just a task that can help people to get a step forward to actually charging what they're worth?
The biggest thing to give you the highest value answer here, the biggest thing that somebody can do is starting to understand what kind of value they provide to their clients. Because once you stop selling videos for the sake of selling videos and you start understanding what problems your clients are facing and you try to find a solution with video to solve that problem, that is when you start to be, or like when you are able to charge more, because clients now don't see you as just a videographer, which there are thousands of, but instead they see you as a problem solver. So they're willing to pay you more because they need their problem solved and they don't just need a video.
Yeah. Solving the business, it's larger than just making a cool video. It is what problem do they have that your video can then help them with?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think the biggest mindset shift for me too was the amount of effort putting into sales with outreach and with, you know, because that's the thing, like, you know, there is the creating content, but there's also just the actual reach out and the the communication aspect, right? I just had a client that kind of was ghosting me, and exactly what you say in your Reels content, just like call them. So I did, and now we're back on track.
There we go.
It's just communication. So absolutely. What do you think is, I mean, in terms of that, what's the biggest disconnect that you see for people with sales?
I mean, easiest answer to this is people hate calls, right? Videographers especially hate calls, and they try to solve every problem through email and text, and it just does not work. The reason why is that you're getting judged based on the emotion that the client is in when they read your message. So let's say a client is in an angry state, right? They're pissed because something has happened. They're stressed out, whatever. Now, they're asking you for a quote, and you're sending them a quote via email out of nowhere. Now, they're getting a number. They're pissed and stressed. They're seeing it, and they're like, oh, what the fuck? This is way more expensive than all these other guys that we talked to. Like, yeah. I'm not going to talk to this guy. You're going to follow up with them again and again and again, sending them emails, messages, and so on, and they're never going to reply any day. Like, they're never going to do it. Now, if you would, when somebody asks you for a quote, just simply take your phone and you call this client so you can ask some questions about what specifically they even want, right? To understand what their goals are, what their needs are, what their challenges are. Then you have the ability to not be judged on just simply a number, but instead you're going to be judged on that like expertise that you have, like on the high, on the level of questions that you're asking. Because imagine, like, every single videographer reaches out with just sending a quote or tries to solve the problem by an email. And now you're the one that calls because nobody else calls. So you're automatically sticking out of the crowd.
Yeah.
So starting to take calls or like do calls instead of trying to solve communication issues through email and messages, that's probably the biggest shift that you can do and low effort.
Well, I think it brings in the human element. It's, you know, we are all entrepreneurs, but like, when you can just have a conversation and connect and, you know, tell a joke and all that stuff and like really connect with the person that you're trying to get business from,
absolutely,
that makes you stand out, period. I love how you call it sell like a doctor, which is, yep, you know, you don't just blanket everything. It's you figure out exactly what the specific issue is, and then you can tailor your stuff to that issue.
100%. 100%. You diagnose the patient, basically, and then you give them what they need. Instead of giving them what they want.
Well, and it's listening too. It's, you know, it's really understanding, you know, what their goals are, what, you know, what they want. Because it might not even be about just making videos. Like, a lot of times the video is the byproduct, but it's their goal is something bigger. So when you can frame the goals of the video to what they want to make and to what they want to achieve, again, you're just standing so far out.
Yeah, 100%. The thing also with this is when you are in a conversation with a client, in a real conversation like we are right now,
yeah,
then you can understand what the real reasons are for why he wants a video, an example. Let's say this. Basic example. Somebody, a videographer, asks the client, what's your goal with this video? The client says, we want to get more brand awareness. Right. Usually what videographers do in this scenario is, oh, okay, more brand awareness, epic. Now we can do this, we can do this, we can do this. And they already have a vision in their mind. But the client's brain doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. Right. The client's brain works differently. And if you do it right, in a conversation, you have the ability to dive deeper and go like, okay, Mr. Client, sounds good. So what is your understanding of more brand awareness? Is that using social media? Is that more followers? Is that more engagement? Like, what exactly are you looking for? Then they say an example, oh yeah, we really want to grow our audience. Okay, audience in terms of followers? Yes. How much? Well, we want to get to 50,000 followers. Oh, and why is that? Like, what's the goal? What do you expect to happen once you have 50,000 followers? Oh, we expect that we're going to book more calls for our sales team, and then we can sell more. Oh, okay. So in the end, we're talking about getting more sales from this? Yes. And now suddenly you approach this project completely differently from just going after the brand awareness goal that they sent you by email and you just accept
it. Well, like, I mean, even just with that conversation, like the call to action changed three times of like what, you know, versus just, you know, the call to action started out as just like, hey, you know, like this page, follow us for more stuff. What it should be is here's a number to call to get in touch with us for business.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's just from diving deeper. I love that. What is for you, and this has been, again, a big, big shift for me, the importance of asking what's your budget?
Dude, that is so freaking important. On a scale from 1 to 10 of importance, it's 11.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's a hot topic, right, that gets discussed amongst creatives as well as creatives and clients, obviously.
Oh, yeah. The argument of what's your budget versus what's your rate is
always the same. And it's understandably happening, right? Because the videographer can obviously deliver a better project or like come up with a more to-the-point idea when he knows the budget.
100%.
But the client obviously wants to know how much it costs before they give you the number because they don't want you to take advantage of them and just take all their money that they have.
I literally had a potential client like call me out on that. I'm just like, well, if I give you a budget, you're just going to charge more. I'm like, okay.
That's exactly the fear that I'm in.
Yeah, fair enough. I need to know where you're at.
but the point of asking is that you're way more efficient, right? You're saving time and you're giving them ideas that they actually can do, because we could literally produce a video for like $500,000, no problem. But what is the purpose of proposing you a $500,000 project when your budget is $7,000? There is no point, right? And that's why we want to
ask. When it's like $500, like, you know, how much do you want to spend on this? Like, I love so much to, even when it's a no, when they're, you know, when you have the kind of the bottom level that you're willing to do, knowing that within a, you know, 15 to 30 minute phone call, saves so much time and effort than like putting the whole presentation together and all this stuff. And then they're like, oh, we can only spend like $500. And if that's below your budget, like, oh, crap, I just wasted that much time. But you just immediately get that and it's super efficient.
I wasted a bunch of time in the beginning when I started out and I didn't ask for their budget, right? I had one company, a candy company, actually, like a candy startup. And they had this great idea of a commercial they want to do. And I was super excited about it, prepared like a whole pitch deck presentation, multiple ideas, showed them everything, super excited, spent hours doing it only for them to come to me and be like, yeah, honestly, we expected you to do this in exchange for our product.
And I was no! Like,
So yeah, it takes you a lot of time, right? Because you set your minimum price. An example for VentureSum, right? My video agency, the minimum price that we had per project was $10,000, or like Swiss francs, which is like $11,000. And if anybody told us on the phone, hey, we don't have that money, cool. All right. That's not a problem. We gladly refer you to another videographer, but we're not the one for you.
And that's, I understand if you're listening to this and you're like, that's scary as hell. Because it is. And I can tell you, after going through this process, you get just your first yes on a bigger number. It really makes it a lot easier to ditch the, you know, the race to the bottom on pricing. And, you know, even like I was having fun with my, you know, being a production assistant on a Disney project for, you know, $250 for 14 hours of work, and it was fine. But like, after you get your first yes for like $10,000, you're like, oh shit, I can never do that again. It's not worth the time at all.
Yep.
And it's absolutely huge. It's a massive mentality switch.
So true. I remember when I got my first client above $10,000, I was like, holy cow, like, this is actually happening.
Life is going to change.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like you were pretty much right out the gate charging pretty decent numbers in 2017. Did you ever do cheaper videos than, you know, the couple thousand?
I did. I remember once I did like an animation for my my high school teacher. she had a language app that she wanted to promote, and then I did like a $1,000 basically animation commercial for it. But that was pretty much the lowest I ever went, was like 1,000.
Yeah.
I was very soon, once I started my business, I was on that high ticket pricing train.
Just had you had the mentality right away.
Yeah, because I bought so many courses and had mentors and coaches, and they taught me that from the beginning on, like high ticket, high ticket, high ticket, high ticket. And that was so in my brain that it was just, I just got the hang of it fairly quickly. And
it takes a lot of years,
5K, 6K projects, and then like 10K, 15K, and so on.
And what I've learned really too is that when, and it's hard when you're starting out because you don't want to lose, like if you're broke, and you don't want to lose any, you know, like even with 500, it sounds like, oh my God, we can eat for a couple of days. Getting into the mentality and, but I mean, that's part of the reach out is the amount of reach out that, you preach really, lets you do the high ticket stuff because you're constantly trying to get more business. You're constantly, you know, going out for new stuff. So it's never just all the eggs in one basket. You have to work as hard. That was the thing that I really realized, the level of work is you have to work as hard on getting new business as you do on making your current business work and making your clients happy.
Absolutely.
And that's harder when you're, you know, especially when you're in the mentality of like, oh, it's going well right now. That's when you need to be getting more stuff.
Yes. And that's where so many people go wrong. I see so many video business owners literally go from, you know, a couple thousand a month, like $2,000-$3,000 a month to $15,000-$20,000 a month.
Yeah.
And this is the saddest thing that could happen. They go like, yeah, man, this is so epic. Like, I'm so grateful for all your help. I'll go and try on my own now. and then literally a couple months later, they come back to us, right? And they're like, hey, I think I fucked up. I'm back at like $2,000-$3,000 a month. What did I do wrong? And the usual thing that happens is, since they don't have an accountability partner anymore, nobody that coaches them, nobody that helps them solve their problems, well, they just stop doing the things they're supposed to do, which is outreach and keeping the numbers high. And because of that, the pipeline dries up, right? They push the remaining projects through and then they realize, oh shit, I don't have anything else coming through.
Exactly. And then, I mean, you know, retainers can fix that, but it's definitely that's a whole...
If you know how to actually retain them. So here's the thing. Here's the thing on, like, let me give you a take on that. Retainer clients are great, but they are a shiny object right now. Everybody wants to get, like, retainers. Then they sign the retainer for, like, 3 months, and they're like, yeah, I got this client for $3,000 a month. That's $36,000 a year. Let's fucking go. Until they realize after the 3 months that the client doesn't want to keep working with them because they didn't provide enough value. Right. Another fault, right? So that's another thing. You need to understand how to build relationship and how to learn how to understand the clients and actually deliver the value that they're expecting so that you can retain them for a very long time. So like a year, 2 years, 3 years. Yeah. That is when it becomes really interesting. But before that, pointless.
Well, and it's funny when it's like you were so excited about the retainers and then you realize, say you got a year contract, like, oh crap, I have to come up with, you know, at least 12 videos now. Yeah, exactly. One thing I did to fix that I have a year contract right now. We sat down, first thing we did was plan. I mean, what was cool is they really knew what they wanted to do month to month. So we just put down a year, and I was like, this can change, you know, it's all good, but like, let's just put the skeleton of this and what it's going to look like down so that we're not confused or stressed as we go through the year. And that's part of providing the value. It's making it easy for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're paying you to get rid of it, basically.
Get
rid of the task.
That's 100%. It's something they don't want to handle, which is exactly why you build a team. So how do you, I mean, other than what we've talked about here, any other recommendations for how creators can market their work and grow their audience?
I mean, there are a couple of very, very good ways how you can do that. And I do have a bunch of free trainings on my YouTube channel and on my Instagram. And
yes, everywhere. The YouTube channel. Yeah. It's, you need to follow Nick's stuff. It's just, it's all this, but in like bite-sized pieces and like really easy to understand skits. It's awesome.
Yeah. And very, very step-by-step. But to give a gold nugget here, like directly in this podcast, the easiest thing that you could do to get clients within the next 7 to 10 days is use the low-hanging fruit strategy. Literally call everybody, every single client that you had in the past, call them up, ask them how they're doing, ask them what their next goals are, and see if you can help them achieve their goals by selling them more videos, right? That is the easiest way to do it. If you don't have a client list, which many don't, right? Because they struggle getting clients in the first place. The low-hanging fruits would be friends and family who own businesses, right? Or friends and family who know other people who own businesses that they can introduce you to. But just like the easiest way to get a client is through your network in the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's such an underrated thing too of like, just, I think a big thing is just asking. If you're afraid to ask, then you're screwed. But like just asking, hey, you know, even just posting on Facebook or texting, you know, guaranteed, at least your mom and dad will know, like some business owners that if you just ask, who knows what can happen. But that, no, it's exactly the low-hanging fruit.
Dude, I, over the course of the 6 years where I ran my video agency, I made about $2.9 million with it. And from that $2.9 million, around, I would say around $700K to $800K came from two clients. Just because we resold them again and again and again and again, and they were happy with the work and they needed more work.
That's I should track actually with some of my more, it's not even retainers sometimes. It's just like random video projects, but like I'll make 20-30K on one client throughout the year just because they keep needing stuff, which is great. Yep. And we have a good working relationship. And again, as we just said, it's relationship based. It's all about the human connection and knowing how to chat and knowing if you are the expert, how to communicate that you're the expert, which is a big thing. And it'll be very apparent when they are happy with your work.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Love it. So let's talk more about with your YouTube and your, you know, the shorts. How do you see kind of cultivating the brand identity and thinking about branding for BBA?
I think it's an interesting question because BBA in itself, the brand, is less known obviously than me as a person.
Fair.
Because I run pretty much the entire company through my personal brand, and that is a very well thought through decision why we did it that way. Basically, when you build a personal brand, and the same goes for any creator out there, right? It doesn't matter if you're running a video agency or a photography business or a web design studio, whatever you're doing, right? Or if you own a car dealership. And at the end of the day, people buy from people, right? And when you build a personal brand with your name attached to it and you deliver value in whatever form, then people are going to start to be interested in what you sell, no matter what it is. And obviously, by making content around one specific topic, in my case, video business owners, all their struggles and all their challenges, you start to attract these types of people and you start growing. And when you start growing, you get more attention. When you get more attention, you obviously get more leads and you get more sales, etc. But the main thing that people are missing out when they're building their personal brand, because many are trying, many are failing, right? The main thing is consistency. I've been out there every single day for the last 2.5 years. There was not a single day where I didn't post. Not one.
Yeah.
Right? There were, I think, a total of like 7 days where I didn't do a feed post. I was still active in the stories though.
Yeah.
But that's like 7 days out of 2.5 years.
That's what it takes though.
Consistency. And then the second thing is whatever works, take it and put money behind it to reach more people. So with every content piece of mine that works well, we run it as an ad. Why? Because it's organically working. It's proven that people engage with it. Great. Then get more attention to it because it will work with more people as well. Right. And that's what nobody
understands. That's why the consistency is so important, is you're every day that you post, you're taking another swing at it. And when one actually hits and hits well, you know that creative is solid, that you can then put money. Yeah, that's that is the best use of money in terms of marketing, the strategy that I've heard. That's great.
Plus, don't get hung up on low numbers. Like, don't look at the views, don't look at the engagement. It doesn't matter in terms of, like, don't devalue yourself because of low numbers that you're hitting. Because even for me, I mean, I have like, I don't know, 80 something K followers on Instagram, right? And when I post the wrong things, they don't work. Like, I literally had a post 3 days ago, I think, it got 40 likes, 40.
Yeah.
40 with 80,000 followers, right? But then 3 days before that, I did the April Fool's joke post, right? And that post has 800,000 views, 20,000 comments, 19,000 likes on the same profile, a couple of days apart from each other.
I know.
Because one thing worked and the other didn't. And that is fine. That's why I'm consistent. That's why I'm trying new things. I'm trying to come up with new ideas. So some of them pop off and some don't. Cool. I'm just not going to do more of what doesn't work. And I'm going to do a lot more of what works.
Well, I think not just for the personal brand, but taking that approach to your clients. So like, they understand that you're going to be doing consistent video stuff. They're like, hey, we're trying stuff out. And if it works, we're going to double down on it. We're going to, you know, and it's really just paying attention to numbers. It's scientific almost. It takes the emotion out of it. It's just like, don't be, you know, whether you really, really love this one idea or this one was kind of a throwaway, it's all just tries and it's all just.
And it's a long-term game. Like, you can't expect that you're going to build a huge personal brand within a week or a month. For some people, to be fair, for some people it happens, right? They go viral with a crazy idea and suddenly they pop off and they have like millions of followers. Cool. Nice. But that's not the usual. Whenever you build a personal brand, it takes time. Like I've been on this for 2.5 years. And when I started, I had like 1,000 followers.
Yeah. No, it's a marathon, not a sprint. It's a sprinting marathon, basically. You still have to keep at it every day. And so, I mean, same with this podcast. My goal is, I'm not looking, I mean, I obviously look at numbers, but like, I just want to get to interview number 100 and then interview 200 and all that stuff. Yep. Like, it's just doing it.
And then suddenly one pops off. I hope it's mine.
Hey, if you share it with the audience, absolutely. I've had one that a guy shared and he had a big audience. So it's like the average numbers are like 20 to maybe 100 views, and then one has 10,000.
There we go.
But hey, it did great. It brought like 50 new subscribers in, so it was really nice.
But here's an interesting thing. Here's an interesting thing about that. Since people really don't understand the way how brands are built and how content actually works online, that's something I get a lot. An example on a post where I have 40 likes, right, because it just didn't work. Then somebody comments or sends me a message like, hey dude, all your followers, they're bought. Like, this these views are fake, and these comments on this one that has thousands of comments, these are all fake and bought. And it's like, no dude, you don't understand. Like, I made a content piece that did not work because people do not like, for whatever reason, they don't engage with it, it doesn't trigger their emotions, it doesn't trigger their engagement finger. And because of that, I need to adapt. Doesn't mean that the things that have worked are suddenly fake. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's as if somebody would say, oh, this episode where you have 10,000 views, these views are bought. Like,
right.
Every other video only has 10 to 100 views. Like, so that means this is bought. What the fuck?
My other response to that would be like, why do you care?
Yeah, that's another question. Yeah.
Like, this is my channel. Go make some stuff of your own.
Yeah.
We understand it's a long game. We understand that, and that's the other thing too. I never promise viral, but I will do everything in my power to get it viral. And it's, you know, it is what it is. Like, it's there's the viral video is not a, you know, I'm sure there are templates for it, but like, it's just usually something original.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely certain things that you can do, and by understanding a market, you can influence the virality of a certain content piece. Like an example for me, I know for a fact when I create a content piece, like a video where I give away something for free, like a contract template or an invoice template or whatever, I know for a fact, even before I post, this content piece works and it's getting way more engagement than usual. And that these are things that I learned, right? So I do have viral formulas for certain categories of my content, but you can't guarantee that every single one is gonna go viral.
Yeah, yeah. You know that that is a higher chance. What I always tell, and that's what I tell clients, I'm like, I'm never promising viral, but I'm saying because we know, just and this is, by the way, this is not like course wise, but video is the best look you can possibly have online, and doing videos for your brand is the best chance you have at going viral. And that's just basic fact. Like, well, you know, how viral it goes, we don't know if it hits or not, but like, you're putting yourself in the best shoes to, you know, the best place to get this out there.
Yeah, true.
So a couple of kind of personal and fun questions to wrap it up. Do you have any, what are some of your favorite, I'll go entrepreneurs and then filmmakers that have influenced you?
Oof. First entrepreneurs?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, certainly like the basic that everybody says, like, oh, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, etc. Like, I find them very interesting, but it's not that I would have had like a direct influence. I mean, on me, to be fair, when I started my video agency, that was kind of like the come up of Gary Vee when he started to really explode. And I literally watched like 2 hours of his content every single day for at least like 2 months. So
that was the idea
too. certainly had a big influence, I would say.
Yeah.
Nowadays, more like people who are really crushing it on a, in a style level, like an example, Iman Gadzi, you probably know.
I don't.
No, you don't? Okay, so that's certainly an inspiration. Mike Thurston, Umar Ashraf, like these kind of guys. And then on the video side of things, I mean, dude, the number one influence I had was Devin Supertramp. Not gonna lie.
Yeah, totally.
That was the main inspiration. And then obviously Parker as well. Out of that, right? Parker Wahlbeck.
Parker's a freaking...
I was like one of the first, I think I was one of the first 50 or 100 students of Full-Time Filmmaker, actually, back in the day when they launched it.
I remember.
Yeah, so these two, I would say.
That makes total sense. It's especially coming from the parkour background, they were very much that, like, kind of bridged the gap on adventure stuff to business stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really good. Hell yeah, I love that. What is one of your favorite quotes and why?
Ooh, that is a deep question. We could go a very long time about that. I would say doing the right thing is always the right thing, and the reason why is because it's true. No, it's like a lot of times, I was like in business, I was faced with different challenges and problems where I had to make a decision how I deal with them. Like, I'll give you an example. I once had a client, a big, big corporation, right? And they did a project with us for like, I think 11K, and they paid the invoice twice, right? Mm-hmm. They paid 11K, and then like 3-4 days later, they paid another 11K. And I was first confused, and two things happened. Number one, my very young brain back then was like, oh shit, that's epic. Like, I just got 22K instead of 11. I could technically keep this. Like, that was one thought. And the other thought then right away was like, no, you can't do that. Like,
yeah.
Dude, if you're not going to be honest about this, it will surface and it will have put a very bad reputation on your brand and name.
And karma, it's a good karma thing right there. That's a good
100%. So I immediately called the company and said, like, hey, guys, you accidentally paid us twice. Like, where can we send the money back to? Yeah. And these kind of situations, like, if you deal with them in a wrong way, as you just said, like, karma is a thing. Like, it builds up or it gets reduced at the end of the day. You get punished when you do things wrong, and you get praised if you do them right.
I literally had that exact same situation happen last week with a $1,000 payment, where charged on the first of the month, and then I guess the invoice finally got paid 3 days later. But I was like, "Hey, did you send this?" She's like, "Not sure." And I was like, "Well, I know you didn't mean to, so here, I'll Venmo it back to you."
Yeah. So yeah, doing the right thing is always the right thing.
Yeah, I agree. Love that. Even harder question. What's the title of your memoir?
The title of my memoir.
Whew.
That is a hard question. I've never thought about that. To get some inspiration, what is yours?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that, actually. So I think something around literally like making cool shit. That's at the base level of everything. That's what I want to do. And, you know, just generally because that will also help people. But like, I want that. The legacy is just like, I made a lot of cool shit.
I would call mine healthy, wealthy, and funny as fuck.
Branding, like, you have the copywriting down more than I do, too. ChatGPT does a lot of my copywriting for me. Awesome. I love that. And then outside of your work, what's kind of a hobby that takes you away from it all?
Many people don't know that. Actually, almost nobody knows that except for like my close friends and family, of course. But one way how I make money, and a good chunk of it, is day trading, actually. I never talk about it online. I never post about it because why the fuck would I? But that's a thing I do every single day. I'm like obsessed with it.
Wow.
So yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah, hey, for knowing how analytical your brain is, that makes sense.
I guess.
No, it's good because it's all numbers and it's all, you know, percentages and like, what do you think it's going to do? And that, yeah.
But the
I love that you day trade to relax.
But the interesting thing is it's way less logical and way more emotional and psychological. Okay. So even like, I would say an analytical person, if they're stone cold, they have an advantage, yes. But I'm still a very empathetic and very emotional person. So it was extremely hard to learn, like extremely hard.
Yeah. What stocks do you like right now?
I don't trade stocks. Literally the only thing I trade is NASDAQ futures.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've had... some really good days on that, and I had some really ugly days on that.
What are NASDAQ futures?
Oh, damn. You want to open up another podcast? we could dive.
Is there a simple definition or no? That's fine.
Well, the thing is this. When you trade a stock, right, you trade an actual stock. Like, you trade the value, a share of a company. When you trade futures, you trade the potential future value of a stock, and then there's, and I don't even understand how it works on like the algorithms and whatever, there are agreements that are made between buyer and the seller on what price the stock is going to have in the future. That's why it's called futures, right?
Yeah.
But honestly, if you want a proper definition, you need to look it up or ask a banker. Because I know how to make money with it, but I don't know how to explain it to somebody.
That's fair. That makes complete sense. If it's working, you don't need to know exactly every detail. It's just, you know what is working for you.
It's actually true. Yeah, it's actually true. Like, probably if I would talk to any professional trader, right, I think they would laugh at me so hard.
Probably, like, yeah.
What the fuck? Do you even know what you're doing? But I'm making money with it, so I'll
listen. If it's working, it's working. That's like my side hustle is stock video, and it's, you know, I'm making, anyway, it's not a lot of money, but an extra $100 a month, and I just literally upload fair footage that I've already shot. It's easy.
Fair.
So lastly here, let me roll out the red carpet for you. Let everybody know where to find you and what you got going on in your life.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest ways to find me are obviously Instagram, right? At I am Nick Metzger. And then on YouTube as well, just Nick Metzger. Just search for my name. You'll find it. And you get a ton of free value. Like, I'm pumping out content like a crazy mofo, especially on Instagram.
Every day. And I see it. It kind of clicked to me during the interview of you're making the little like skits with like client, you know, just conversations for videographers. And I'm like, I'm posting about video marketing in the mountains, but like, I should be doing them like skits for my clients. It's genius. I think that's a fantastic way to go about it. I'm going to start doing that more.
Yeah, do it.
Get all the Rocky Mountain people to laugh a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, making them laugh is always a great way to get in touch, you know?
100%. Well, man, I appreciate your time, and happy we could finally do this. And just thank you so much for sharing some insights.
Of course. Thanks for having me on. It was fun.
Absolutely. For everybody watching and listening, I will see you next time.